to a new episode of the Monday Mile podcast. This week, we're linking up with British Paralympic swimmer. In 2008, she won two golds for Great Britain, and she was the youngest member of the team. She then went on to win two golds and claim the world record in 2012, and another gold in Rio 2016. She's got an MBE. In fact, she is and was the youngest to ever get one. She's also got an OBE and is an advocate for representation across disability. Ellie Simmons.
Oh, thank you very much, Amy. What a beautiful way to meet and do this mile too. Like, it's an incredible setting.
You have brought the sunshine to Regent's Park. Now, you've spent quite a bit of time in London. Does this particular park hold a special place in your heart?
Yeah, I spent probably last training into Tokyo in London for about 5 years. So for me, like, London's my second home, and now I live here. I miss it so much. Like, when I come back, I'm like, oh gosh, I wish I still lived here, because there's so much to do in this city. And like, I used to train at the Aquatic Centre in Stratford. Used to spend every day there. But yeah, this park, I didn't live too far away from it. So for me, it's like, yeah, a bit of home here.
So you've sort of recently retired. Tokyo 2020, which actually was in 21. Now, a lot of athletes find life after sport quite tricky. But from the outside, to me, it looks like you've only excelled. How have you found it?
It's actually been weird, because like you said, it does look like I've excelled, and it does look like I've found a bit of a different career path. But actually, like, there's been days when it's a bit like highs and lows. And I think for me, and I'm sure you are the same, when you've done your sport for so many years, like, I started swimming when I was 5, went to my first world championships in 2006 when I was 12, and retired when I was 26 27. All I've known is swimming. That's all I've known. I've known where I've got to be every single day. You have your 4-year plan. I've been to 4 games. I knew that I was going to try to go for 4 games. And then all of a sudden, it stopped. You don't have to wake up for swimming. It's a bit like, what am I going to do? And yeah, I've had these amazing opportunities, but mentally it's been like, gosh, a bit lost, because in a way I'm known as Ellie Simmons the swimmer. That's my identity. But what is it actually now that I'm good at? Like, I don't know, because I know I'm good at swimming, but the world is so, so big. There's so many opportunities. But actually, what do I enjoy doing? And sometimes you wake up and think, it's so nice that you've got this time. It's so nice that you can do anything. But actually, what am I going to do? Like, what do I want to do? And you feel lost. And like, it's weird, because I think, like, in social media, it looks like you're having the best time. You're doing lots of different stuff. But there's days when you're like, yeah,
Is it all going?
Yeah,
right?
And I think I try and describe it like a bit like an emotional roller coaster. Like, some days you love it, some days it's so nice not to be swimming, not to have a bit of purpose in being an athlete. And then some days I'm like, gosh, what shall I do? What do I want to do? I'm like, yeah, you've got no target, because I've always been used to training with or living life with a target of, yes, excelling at your sport or having a purpose, going to training every single day, having that 4-year plan. And now it's like, gosh, what is it? What do I want to do? But it has been incredible as well. Like, last year was amazing. Probably, yes, yeah, such a fun year with the Commonwealth Games and the opportunity with that, and then Strictly. So it has been really, really nice. But it's weird, because some days it's, yeah, like, you get all these opportunities and it's amazing, and some days it's like, oh, it's some quiet days too.
I think it's quite refreshing to hear you speak straight off the bat very openly about the difficulties that you or one can have post-athlete life, because I definitely think it's something that maybe isn't addressed enough, because having that structure and then being stripped of it, there's a lot of questions around finding your why and purpose. Do you find that you're still striving to fill that hole?
Very much so, I think. Yeah, but, like, I don't know what I want to do. Like, and yes, I've got all these great opportunities and I'm trying so many different things, but actually, what do I enjoy doing? I love being around people. I love working in, like, TV, and I love sports. So I know that that's what I want to do, and in that revenue, in a yeah, say, but still, like, what is it actually I want to do? And it's funny, because I'm sure you had it, like, your performance lifestyle, person on the team used to, like, before you, when you were training or when you were away, used to like plan with you what you're going to do after sport and stuff, and like say you should do a course and all this type of thing. And at the time I was like, oh no, I don't need to do that, I'm just a swimmer, you know, I'm just an athlete, I don't need to plan really my life after sport. But actually it would have been nice to probably have a bit more of a plan, yeah, and try out more. And especially for me, like, I don't know about you, Amy, but I didn't go to university, so I didn't go to, like, I went to college for a bit, but that's it. Like, so I never had any like form of education or something. I was always just a swimmer in a way, and maybe having that bit of a balance while I was an athlete would have maybe helped in the past. But again, also, it's quite nice just to go with the flow sometimes,
yeah,
too.
I think that's the thing, coming from that background and being so structured. Snowboarding was definitely a little looser in the sense that it's a relatively new Olympic sport, so there's not years and years of foundations of a structure to follow, and it's a free sport, so definitely different. But there's elements from that lifestyle for sure I've implemented, yeah, in what I do now, and I guess a big part of that is the discipline,
yeah,
timekeeping.
Very much I'm like that. I live off my diary. I like to know where I am every single day. I love a plan. But also I think those amazing skills that we learn as an athlete have definitely followed through, and it's some amazing skills that we have now, like, yeah, you said, the time keeping. Like, I hate being late, I'm always early to things, I love being disciplined, I love research and I love planning, I love being organized. Like, that's what I was like as an athlete, and now it's helped like with everyday ways of life now. And yeah, it's weird because you do get like, I don't know about you, but like when people are late or things are late, you're like, ah, because like when my coach used to like say to me, if I was 5 minutes early, I was all right, but if you're on time, you're late. So with training, it used to be like that, and now it's like, oh, it follows through to this.
I can confirm Ellie was on time today. In fact, she was early. So there you go, living true to everything you speak. So you mentioned your difficulties, but as you said, from the outside, I've only seen you rise since retiring from swimming. From having your own documentary to working for BBC Sport and being one of the anchors across the Commonwealth Games, you captained us to glory for Sport Relief, and you danced on BBC Strictly. To me, there's nothing about that that's not impressive. That's incredible.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was definitely a good year last year. And like you said, loads of different things, which is quite nice as well. Make sure you don't slip on that mud. Could you imagine that would be a good image?
No.
On the mud.
Not the one.
Yeah, some amazing, incredible opportunities, like the Commonwealth Games, and especially having the Commonwealth Games in Birmingham, I mean, which is where I'm from, and to be part of that and sitting on the sofa and chatting about my teammates and athletes and all the swimmers and all the other different sports that was going on at the same time was just an opportunity like no other. Like, it was like sitting next to Claire Balding and Mark Foster and Becky Adlington, like the greats of the sports, and greats of chatting with Claire and stuff, like, was just, yeah, fabulous. Like, such a great opportunity. And what Birmingham did to host the Commonwealth Games was, yeah, just, did you get to see any sports?
I did, actually. I got to go and see a little bit of swimming.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I spent an evening in the swimming pool.
Oh,
watched a bit of swimming, and
Sandwell.
The atmosphere,
yeah,
was incredible. I wish I competed at a home games.
Is it hard to bring the snow over?
I don't think it was ever going to happen for me, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it does seem as though it brings a completely different spirit. And not only that, I think it opens up opportunity to inspire people that live on the doorstep in that city, and that,
yeah,
for me was a really big takeaway. And then,
oh, exactly,
you of course were the captain of Sport Relief.
Yes, woo! We didn't do that well. You won, the blue team won, so I was again incredibly honoured to be captain of the blue team, my favourite colour, which was amazing for Sport Relief and Comet Relief. And again, it was a great challenge that was had, like, all you guys all doing different sports, and you were part of the blue team, weren't you? Basketball 3x3
basketball.
That was a great venue, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was insane. So from the outside, it's your career's gone from strength to strength. How have you managed to balance that and your life in the public eye? Because that's quite the transition.
I'm quite a private person, really. Like, on my social media and when I speak to, like, the media and stuff like that, I don't really speak much about my life outside of this, yeah, in a way. Like, I'm very much my house and my family and the bits that you don't see in the media. I'm very much private, and I think that's really nice to I've got, like, my work mode Ellie, like Ellie in the media, Ellie in sport, Ellie in, yeah, TV, and then Ellie with my friends and family and all that type of stuff. And it's quite really nice to have that, because when I go on the train or when I go back home, like, it's just nice to
switch off.
Yeah, to totally switch off, because it is amazing. Like, it's incredible, like, having being part of them in the media in a way, because, like you said, the opportunities that I get, and especially with, like, representation now of different disabilities and the journey that the Paralympics has been on, like,
yeah,
from when I got inspired watching Athens 2004, sitting on the sofa as an 8-9 year old, people didn't really know what the Paralympics was. Like, I remember people saying, like, oh, you wanting to do the Paralympics, and they thought it was like the Special Olympics, which, again, Special Olympics, give credit, like, is a great competition, but yeah, it was, again, it's different to the Paralympics. So people didn't know what the Paralympics was, and then you had Beijing, and then you had London 2012, which, what it did for Paralympic sport and the Paralympics and representation was just phenomenal. Like, we sold out crowds, people wanted to see the Paralympics. There were household names like Johnny Peacock, David Weir, Sarah Story, Hannah Cockcroft, and then you had, and also what Channel 4 did as well, with, like, the adverts, like, thanks for the warm-up and superhumans. And it was like, London 2012 was a game, like, if people say to me, oh, what was your favourite games, I'm always like, London 2012. Like, walking out in that aquatic centre and having 17,500 people shout for you and cheer you on, like, gosh, it gives me goosebumps now. Like, it was electric, and I was really, it was good as well. Like, I swam the best I ever have, so I was like, well done Ellie, you picked the perfect time to do that, like, with all the pressure that I had, and also competing in front of a home crowd as well, like, the pressure that people were expecting me to get the gold medal even before I'd swam and stuff. And but yeah, I swam really, really good, like, both in the heats and the finals, PB'd, personal best in all my races, so it was great. So, and also nice to see, like, what the Paralympics did, and people know now what the Paralympics is all about. And I think that's not just for Paralympic sport, but also in the eye for people with different disabilities as well. I think people saw, of all different kinds, like, all different disabilities saw what the Paralympics was, and it helped them in society as well. And it's just going from strength to strength. Like, it needs to, like, be better in a way, like, still needs to go forward, but it's getting there.
How do you think we can change disability representation, not just in the UK but worldwide?
I think that's a great question, Amy, and because I think in Britain it's getting better and better. Like, I think what the Paralympics has done, and also media representation as well, like, you have the likes of, like, JJ, you have the likes of George on CBBC, there's more and more, Sophie Morgan on, like, Loose Women, there's more individuals with different disabilities on mainstream TV, and I think that really helps with society and the acceptance of different disabilities in societies. But actually worldwide, this, it could be way more improvement. Like, even in the USA, the Paralympics is hardly shown.
Really?
In America, and you think America, like, sport,
one of the biggest countries in the world
for sport, and there's hardly any TV. And I think what we need to do in the world, again, is to follow the likes of what we're doing, have people with different disabilities in media, because I think TV,
yeah,
is so powerful, because there's so many people watch it, not just kids, not just adults, every age watches TV. And if you see the likes of yourself, different disabilities on TV, it helps change society, because people are looking at different people, watching different people, and it just, yeah, trickles. And also people higher up, like in politics, in the government, again, need to, like, treat people with different disabilities the right way.
And you say the right way, and this is where I want to get a greater understanding. What is the right way to treat someone with a disability?
Like how you treat anyone, really. Don't treat them any differently. And I think sometimes you can mollycoddle
someone.
That's like a collar.
You can wrap them in cotton wool.
Or treat them like say for people like me, like back in when I was younger, like they would like come and like pat me on the head or pat me on the shoulder or like rub my cheeks just to like, oh, like I was a cute little thing.
That is so disrespectful.
Yeah, and again,
you're not a toy.
You would never do that to an average height person or a person who's non-disabled. So just treat people exactly like how you want to be treated or exactly the same as everyone else. Like, we're no different, you know? Yeah, we may look different, or there's a lot of disabilities out there that are hidden, that you can't see that they've got a disability, but just treat people how you want to be treated. And I think, yeah, that's the way forward. And also, I think education is a big, big thing. And sometimes, like, when families are out and about and the kids like to have a bit of a stare and stuff, like, I think when the parents bring them over and the kids come and chat to me like an everyday person, I think, again, that educates the kids that I'm exactly the same. I might just be a bit smaller, but, like, just that talking is so, so powerful.
Yeah. Has there ever been a time where you did feel different?
Again, like as a kid, there was. I remember actually there was a time where it clicked, where I knew I had dwarfism. Like, I knew I was different to like my friends at school playing in a playground. Remember, I was at primary school. I think year one, year two, that age. Again, I can't remember what age, but must have been young. And I was playing hide and seek in like a playground, and I was the seeker. And I remember just like, do you know when you have this moment where you like click, like, oh my gosh, I'm different. Like, my friends are all tall. Like, why am I small? And I remember I went back home and asked those sort of questions to my mum, like, oh, what's dwarfism? Why am I small and all that stuff? And she answered and stuff. But yeah, that was that moment where it clicked to me that I was, as a kid, that I was different to my friends at school and stuff, and I had dwarfism. But I think now, like, not really, because I think this is all I know. All I know is that I'm small. Like, I don't know any different. I don't know what it's like to live in an average height world. The only world I know is that it's a bit smaller. And yeah, I have to ask people to reach something high up in a supermarket, and I have pedal extensions to drive a car, but I find ways to work at, like, work things out and to get there, you know. Sometimes I have to climb to get a towels down in a hotel room and things, and I've got loads of stools around my house, which sometimes can be a bit annoying, and especially in the dark when you forget they're there and you walk into my leg, you know, when you walk into a stall, yeah. It really hurts. But yeah, I don't know any different, so in a way, like, this is all I know, a small world, you know. And I think it's getting better and better, but it's still like, there's still times where people, yeah, have a stare, have a laugh, like even now, like, and it's getting better and better, but like, yesterday in the gym, I had someone like filming me and laughing at me, filming me. And I think, like, that's me, you know. I'm an athlete, I'm just doing a gym workout, and yet still, like, they're invading my privacy or invading and filming me for like entertainment. And I'll think to myself, like, there's still so much we can do, and like, I'm okay, like, with that person. Like, they didn't get to me, they didn't upset me, yeah. But I'm lucky, like, I am who I am. But it needs to change for other people, because some people it could get to, and yeah, it's still got to me, because actually I'm talking about it now. But you know, like, it just needs to get better and better. And why do that? Why film someone that's different? Yes. Hello.
I think I've seen you on the TV.
Yeah.
Oh, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
Yeah. I've seen her.
Oh. She's the best.
Yeah, she is.
Got to check out this. We're filming.
Check out Amy's podcast.
Monday Mile. Yeah. We're in the middle of filming.
All right.
So you're in the podcast now.
Am I?
We're miking up.
There you go. Oh, nice to meet you.
Ellie, you're making waves everywhere you go. you've been such a strong advocate for representation. Let's tap in to your most recent documentary, which is currently out on BBC iPlayer.
Yeah, that's a little plug, isn't it? Go watch it now.
There's a little plug for you.
Oh,
but
you
investigate different types of dwarfism and a drug which can effectively make change.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so in the dwarfism community, there was a bit of uproar when this drug came about by BioMar, and it's called Vosoritide. And it's in the UK, it's still on trial, so it's quite new over here. But in America, it's just been passed by the FDA. So I go and investigate it and find out more, because before finding out more about this drug, you know, in the dwarfism community, everyone was very much against it. Like, it's, why is this drug around? Like, a child or an individual from the age of zero to when they stop growing, which is, can vary for people with dwarfism, can, again, the same as when you hit puberty, really. They inject themselves every single day, and a certain protein from the drug goes into the child, and it makes them grow quicker and faster. And BioMarin also state that it helps with different things that comes with dwarfism, such as like back problems, neck problems, ear problems, like the bowing of the legs.
Kind of scary that something like that could change the makeup of who you were born as, essentially.
Exactly. And like, I was very much against it. Like, why change who we are, you know? Like, if I hadn't got dwarfism, would I have gone to the Paralympics or the Olympics or anything like that? I am who I am today because of who I am and what I've got, the disability that I've got. And why change someone? Like, we're, it's so good to be different. Like, imagine a world where we were all the same. It would be so boring. So why is this company making this drug? Oh, pigeons. making this drug with scientists that are changing the people like me. So I go and chat to people in America, I go chat to people in Britain for and against it, people who have taken the drug and why have they taken it and stuff. But I think at the end of the day, like, I was very much against it, but now I'm like, it's choice, isn't it? Like, yeah, it's always going to be here. Like, this drug by Mar, and you can't get rid of it anymore. It's a big, big company. But now what we need to do is just educate society. Society, because people who have had children, birth children, because likes of myself, my parents are average heights, so it's not just individuals with dwarfism that have children with dwarfism. Anyone can have a child that's got dwarfism. It's just about educating society of what it's like living with dwarfism, and it's not a bad thing. We're just small, and yeah, we sometimes have a few different issues that come with the disability, but that can be like medicine and science and all that type of stuff is amazing and can help that. But yeah, just don't change your child to help them fit into society. We just need to educate society. Yeah,
I think that's such a beautiful point, that education can change the narrative of how people as a whole with any form of disability fit in.
Yeah,
because everybody should be welcome in any community, no matter size, shape, disability. What do you think we can do further to make society a more accepting place?
Again, talking about it is so, so powerful. I think words and being open and understanding about different people, and I think it's getting better and better, and like this, like today, or things in the media, things on podcasts, or talking just in the park, you know, and especially like the likes of going into schools, chatting to children, because they're the ones that are going to be that next generation, educating them. But I think talking is a big, big thing, and yeah, just talking about different disabilities, education on different disabilities, and we're all different in different ways.
And for someone who does have dwarfism, who's maybe a little bit younger or maybe not as confident as you are, because you are shining a light that anything is possible.
Oh, thank you.
What would you say to them to help them shine in that confidence that they deserve?
I think like there's some amazing dwarfism charities out there, and I think I've been part of those charities since I was a dot, really, since I was really, really young. And I think that really, really helped me growing up, because it was like I was able to be around people that were like me, and in a way it helped with the identity of who I was, because I could see people of like me, of all ages, older, younger, girl, boy, anyone. And it was so nice because, yeah, I grew up in that community. It really, really helped me. So I think finding dwarfism, and there's some amazing dwarfism charities out there, Dwarf Sports Association, Little People, UK, Restricted Growth, Child Foundation, all those different charities, and getting involved with them really helps, yeah, have an identity. You see people like you, and it's just so, yeah, so fulfilling.
You've also recently embarked on another journey with a second documentary.
Yeah.
Can you give us a little insight into what you're working across with that?
Yeah, I'm actually, this being a year-long documentary, really, it's with ITV, and it's looking at disability in adoption in the care system as well, because it's seen even now and last year that children with a disability are harder to place up for adoption and are in a way stuck in the care system. There is a percentage, but I think I need to get my brain thinking about maths or getting their research.
We'll let you off.
Yeah, yeah, it's like 40%.
They should watch the documentary,
yeah,
so they know.
Yeah, I've been following like social workers, and I've been following families who have adopted children with different disabilities, and families who have had children with different disabilities and maybe thought about like putting them up for adoption, or yeah, it's been fascinating. Again, it's a different way of having representation and different disabilities and talking about it, and yeah, it's coming out soon, but it's been fascinating to watch. I've not watched it yet. Fascinating to
like watch it unfold.
Yeah, that's a good one. Watch it unfold and just be part of it and meet some amazing families. And like I met an individual guy who's adopted six children with all different disabilities, and just what a remarkable human he is, you know. And like just to meet so many different people like that is just, yeah, being so eye-opening.
You've got a lot of different strands going on, Ellie, which is so incredible to see. How do you find time for you and your own wellness and juggle that routine now you're not on the athlete regime? Yeah.
Well, I try and still go do like exercise. I think as an athlete you're drawn to it, aren't you?
Oh yeah.
I love, like, I think mentally as well it helps when you go into, like, I don't swim anymore. People ask me like, do you still swim? No, I don't, because I get a bit bored. Like, I think because I've done it for so many years, yeah, I go in and I swim for like 15 minutes, then I get really bored, so I do different, like, I go to the gym and stuff. And but I think it's really important to balance the work life and the personal life. Like, I love going away, like, I love travelling. That's like my fix of like getting away and just seeing the world. And yeah, like if I had a hobby, I think it'd be getting on a plane and going somewhere abroad, if that can be a hobby. But yeah, that's my hobby.
That's a brilliant hobby. I love that. You were in Washington DC, Colorado. Where's next on the bucket list?
So I'm going this year, actually. I'm going to Egypt in a couple of weeks.
Come on.
And that's scuba diving. I never scuba dived before, but I just on the weekend did a scuba diving course, and then able to scuba dive in, do my first 2 days in Egypt, and then scuba dive for the week. And then I'm going to go to Thailand, but that's a bit of work, and then Bali, and then I'm volunteering in Germany, and then gonna go Hawaii in September. So just
that's,
yeah,
quite a wholesome travel list you've got.
I try and go, like, yeah, like I'm drawn, as you can see, Amy, which you might be, I'm drawn to the hot places.
I'm with you on that, Ellie.
Not to the cold places. You'll never see me on top of a mountain. Love to do that. Like, I'd love to do a little challenge, but if I choose to have my way, I prefer to be in a hot country on a beach or swimming in the ocean.
I'm 100% with you. A little bit like the fact that you don't go swimming recreationally anymore. I don't stand in the cold on top of a mountain for enjoyment, but I do still like cruising on my snowboard. Scuba diving, swimming, they're kind of similar.
Yeah, they're pretty similar,
yeah. A bit of a cross correlation there. It's, I reckon you'll probably feel quite comfortable in that environment.
Yeah, pretty much. I've just got an oxygen tank. I'm still going under deep down, but yeah, holding my breath, it's pretty much the same thing.
I've heard you speaking quite a lot about independence, and clearly that's something that is gained when you travel.
Yeah.
Why is independence so important to you?
I think independence is really, really important, and again with different disabilities, and I think just having your independence and having your confidence and going out and about, and I think travel gives you that, because again, travel is amazing. And like, I had a year out traveling after 2016. I had a bit of a tough time going into Rio mentally, and so can you see I'm puffed out, but oh, I need to go to the gym more. Yeah. Had a bit of a tough time leading into Rio, and afterwards decided I just needed to figure myself out and find myself in a weird way, and decided to go traveling for the year. And some of those places I went on my own too, and I think you find yourself so much when you're on your own and you've got that independence. You've got to like find your way, you get lost, you've got to get from A to B, you make friends, like, and I think again traveling gives you that confidence to be put in a situation where you've got to chat to people, you've got to make friends and stuff like that. And yeah, I think independence is a big thing, but there's always some times when you need a bit of, like, I'm very much like an extrovert, like I love being around people and getting the energy off other people, like it's such a nice thing to do.
Yeah, I'd definitely say you carry yourself with an air of confidence. With that, does there come a pressure to be a role model?
You know what, like when I was an athlete, definitely, like I felt that pressure. Again, like, you know, majority of my, like when I was with my school friends, majority when you do the drinking and figuring yourself out with all that type of stuff, that was me going into like London 2012. So I could never really do that, like drinking and partying, because I was like training for London 2012, and I wanted to, but again, I felt like if I go out and about and people see me being naughty and stuff like that, then yeah, I didn't want people to put that picture to me, because I wanted to be a professional athlete. So yeah, there was pressure, but now pretty much no, because I don't feel that. Like, I just go about my everyday, you know what I mean?
And like, yeah. Do your bits.
Yeah, to go out and do my bit. So yeah, I don't really feel the pressure now, really.
I suppose it's almost not pressure, right? But there's an element of responsibility that could come with everything that you've achieved, because you are in the public eye and you're making change.
I try. Oh, that's so nice to say, because you don't really think about it. But I try and just be me in a way, and I think to be a genuine person, I think, to be who you are and not be someone else, you know what I mean, I think is very important to me. And like, I'm very much, you get what you see. What you see in the media or on socials or out and about is who I actually am in real life, you know what I mean? Or when I'm in my pyjamas at home on the sofa, like, that's me, you know? Like, I'm not trying to be someone I'm not.
And that's what we love. That is why we love you, Ellie Simmons.
Yeah, imagine me sitting on the sofa. I love that. Like, that's what I love doing in the evenings, getting into a good series. Probably falling asleep. That's what I do.
That was me last night. That's all of us every night. And that's what's relatable, and that's good. Without a doubt, you are leaving a legacy. But if you could write your legacy, what would it be?
Oh, gosh, that's a tough question, Amy.
I think you're the fitting person to answer it, because you are writing it and you are special in that you're different and you're making change.
Yeah, I think what legacy I'd love to leave is that you can do anything if you put your mind to it. And if it's being an ex-Olympian or Paralympian, or whether it's being good at being a doctor or a nurse or anything. I think having that ambition and having that dream, you can achieve it. If it's little, if it's big, whatever it is. And I think that would be like my love to be the legacy that I leave. And yeah, I think that would be what I'd like. But also again, we're all so, so different, and just to the acceptance of different people into society, I'd love to that to be a legacy and to get better and better.
Love that.
Thank you.
What's your relationship like with Monday?
Oh, I love a Monday.
Do you?
Yeah, I actually really, really like a Monday, because normally, like, I've probably had a bit of a social weekend.
That's what we like to hear. Go
on, girl. Done something on the weekend, and then Monday is like the first day back. So normally Mondays is like the day where I'm like probably the most focused, because I like get, if I'm home or if I'm out and about, like I get my diary out, or I get like, yeah, just in that mind frame that it's Monday, it's a new week, let's start fresh, let's get at it. Yeah.
So the weekend's kind of let off the gas a little bit, and then boom,
yeah,
we're back in the zone.
Yeah, like smash it. It's a new week, it's a new...
Such an athlete mentality, I love it. Yeah, we're going to smash it. I'm a little bit like that, I'm not going to lie. You know, foot off the gas for a couple of days, and then back to slaying, we say. And lastly, Ellie, is there any life mottos or quotes that you live by that you can share with our listeners?
Oh, that's a good one. Like when I was an athlete, like my coach used to be like a happy swimmer is a fast swimmer.
Ooh.
Because it is, like, if for me, when I was swimming, when I was happy outside of life, in like, yeah, socially or at home or whatever, I used to swim my best, because I used to come in like into the pool with a happy frame of mind, and then I used to swim really well. So he used to say a happy swimmer is a fast swimmer, which I think is true. So probably that helps again in everyday life, really. Like when you're happy, you get the best out of things, don't you? And I think taking that you time is really, really important too. Like me and my best friend, we do like the three gratitudes. So each day we send each other like three simple things that, like it could be like, oh, today like the weather's really nice, or I had like a nice almond croissant, or I've met you today and had a good chat. So just those little three things, and I think that helps you like, yeah, take into the the little things to help you again be happy, because I think sometimes there's so much life pressure of like being big or like achieving big, where actually sometimes it's just the little things that make you happy. Taking that you time is really, really important. Again, that balance between work, social life, but having that bit of you time as well.
I really, really resonate with the little things.
Yeah.
For me, I think I thrive off the little things, and definitely the weather's a big one for me today. And good conversation, good people. They make the world go round and me smile.
Yeah, no, definitely, like the weather, isn't it? It makes you feel so happy, feels so good when you come out of the house and you're like, oh, it's nice weather, you feel really, really good.
Ellie Simmons, it has been an absolute joy to speak to you on this glorious day. For me, definitely one of the biggest takeaways from this conversation is balance, and how you somehow, in amidst the chaos of this incredible career you're creating in this new path, you still seem to find the joy in the little things. Thank you so much for joining us on the Monday Mile podcast.
Thank you, Amy. It's been fab.
To those of you tuning into this audio, I really, really hope you've enjoyed it. I certainly did. You know what to do. Make sure you subscribe, and we will see you next week. A new episode drops every single Monday into the early hours, just in time for your morning commute. Monday Mile listeners, it's a wrap.